Welcome back to What's at Risk. I'm Mike Christian. Christopher Reich hit a new high water mark for himself in 2008 with Rules of Deception, an intriguing tale about a skilled surgeon who discovers that his wife is an espionage agent and has been leading a double life and deceiving him throughout their marriage. The novel ended with the possibility, though not necessarily the promise, of a sequel. Rules of Vengeance, which picks up where Rules of Deception left off, is much more than a sequel. It is one of those books that authors dream of and readers die for.
Spectre always delivers what it promises. Our whole organization depends on our keeping those promises. I warn you, we do not tolerate failure number three. You know the penalty.
Yes. Number one.
Our rules are very simple. If you fail... seconds. One day we must invent a faster working venom.
The story picks up approximately 6 months after Rules of Deception ends. Dr. Jonathan Ransom has taken a short leave from his Doctors Without Borders humanitarian practice in Africa to attend a medical conference in London, where he has been invited to present a lecture. But he has hardly checked into his hotel when he is given enigmatic instructions that result in a reunion with his wife, Emma, whom he has not seen in over 6 months. Emma has been on the run from her old employer, Division, a secret American intelligence agency she betrayed during the events that took place in Rules of Deception.
Very suspicious, Mr. Bond.
Oh, I find I live much longer that way.
Ransom's time with Emma is short and bittersweet. After informing him that she will be gone for at least a year, she disappears, or at least attempts to. Ransom has practically no training in espionage, but is able to follow her to a location in London where he witnesses a horrific event. Emma detonates a car bomb that kills a group of bystanders and injures several others, including a Russian ambassador. Worse, it is Ransom who is blamed for the bloodbath. In the aftermath, Emma disappears and Jonathan is apprehended by the police and threatened with life imprisonment unless he helps secure his wife's capture. Faced with an impossible decision, Jonathan makes a daring escape. On the run, he realizes that his only option is to become a spy himself in order to track down Emma and discover the true nature of the conspiracy she appears to be masterminding. In the process, Jonathan begins to realize that all along he's been a pawn in a high-stakes game of international intrigue and one-upmanship far beyond his imagining.
I wanted to tell you about a show which was on. It was, I Led Three Lives. You know, that Herb Philbrick thing where he used to talk to himself under his breath all the time. And no one seemed to notice it. You know. And anyway, they had about 39 episodes a year of this show. And it was on 3 years that I know of, which would have been 127 episodes. No, 107 episodes. 117 episodes. That's one reason I'm no longer an accountant. Over 100 episodes they had of this show. I had one doubt about the show. I felt it lacked a certain realism. I felt in one of the episodes, they should have showed a communist cell meeting. And one of the comrades should have stood up and said, say, has anyone else ever noticed whenever we assign Philbrick to anything, we all get arrested?
The USSR is the biggest country around. They don't like people putting them down. And when they get bored, they have a parade. Or find a country they want to invade. When the harvest comes around, the proletariat parties down. Vodka's strong and the bread is brown. Over in the Soviet Union.
There's a spy in the house of love, and he knows what I'm thinking of.
Christopher Reich is the New York Times best-selling author of Rules of Deception, Numbered Account, and The Patriots Club, which won the International Thriller Writers Award for Best Novel in 2006.
We're speaking with Christopher Reich, the author of the just-released Rules of Vengeance. There's a great story about how you were originally discovered as a writer by James Patterson. Can you share that with us?
Well, I had previously, in my other life, been working as an investment banker in Switzerland, and I decided one day to stop that and pursue a career as a writer. So I'd moved back to the States, and after, you know, spending some time, after about 9 months, I had, you know, the 660-page manuscript, and I was able, through a close family friend who read the book and liked it and showed it to his boss, and his boss was none other than James Patterson. And Jim, or as we call him at our house, St. James,
right.
He actually read the pages. And at the time, he was not just a best-selling writer, he was still the CEO of J. Walter Thompson Advertising Agency. So if you wonder why it writes those short chapters, it's because he would get up in the morning at 4:30, write a chapter, then go to work running this worldwide advertising agency. Well, Jim read the pages and really liked him, and he called me up and said, you know, this is just great. It reminds me of that early Robert Ludlum, and I'm going to recommend you to my agent. Well, lo and behold, 10 minutes later, his agent, Richard Pine, calls and says, love the book. Can I represent you? And I say, you know, that was a no-brainer. Definitely. So it went from there, and then a year later, we rewrote the book, and we sold it to Delacorte, and a year after that, it came out and went right to the top of the bestseller list. So it was great.
And which book was that again?
That was Numbered Account, my first novel.
Right. I didn't realize that Patterson was also running J. Walter Thompson, because he's, what, he got like 30 books that have been on the New York Times bestselling list?
This was back in 1996, 97, and Jim was really just starting out himself as a, let's say, bestselling hardcover author. He'd written some paperbacks that had done well, but at that point he just had Along Came a Spider and Kissed the Girls, and he was still very much in the one-book-a-year mode before he kind of quit the day job and went full steam ahead into, you know, what we recognize now as Jim Patterson, which is 3 to 4 really fun books a year.
Your books have a degree of authenticity in terms of technology and espionage techniques. How do you conduct the research for that?
Well, I've been fortunate that over the years writing these books and enjoying some success, I've been able to establish, let's say, a network of professionals inside the intelligence community that have decided to be so kind to help me out when I ask them questions about what's going on. So, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, I'm back in D.C. and New York, and even in London, where I meet with respectively the FBI, CIA, some friends at MI5, which is the British Security Service, as well as some think tanks in the States and abroad, and they just helped me out with telling me what is going on today in the world of intelligence, the stuff that we really don't read about and how things, you know, really function. So I try to put that information, as much as I'm allowed to, as much as they expose to me, into the books to give it that really degree of authenticity, which allows you then to suspend your disbelief. And when things get crazy at the end, you go, wow, if he was telling me the truth on page 10, I'll believe him on page 450.
Right. What originally spurred your interest in national security and espionage and all the things you write about?
You know, I just did something I've always had a fascination with. I got my foreign service degree from Georgetown University, so I was exposed to the national security environment there with a lot of my professors, having been former members of the National Security Council and the Federal Reserve. And so that started early, and then I just combined it with my love of thrillers. You know, I just write the books that I love to read, which were those great, you know, the Ludlum books of the 70s, Frederick Forsyth, John le Carré. So that is just what turns me on as a writer. That's the only thing I could write, and so that's what comes out of me.
How'd you parlay that career in investment banking into writing? Were you writing all along and then just decided?
I've never been someone that has to write. Okay, I've never been someone that loves writing so much that I just have to write something. So I had been working as an investment banker in Switzerland for a number of years, and I went to my wife and I said, you know, I basically had enough of this 14 hours a day working in office buildings and traveling around and not even, you know, seeing the sights. You know, I want to quit. She goes, well, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be a novelist. And she looks at me, she goes, well, tell me something. She goes, do you have any short stories that are like hiding in the drawer I don't know about? I said, no. She goes, did you even take one English class in college? I said, no, I didn't. Guilty. And I said, but I know I can write novels. And I read so much, I just know it's in my system. And my wife looked at me, and she hugged me. She said, you know, I know you can do it, too.
I think if I came home and made that announcement, I wouldn't be embraced as much as you were.
It was easier at the time. We had, you know, newly married, no kids. I'd been working, as a banker, so I had some money saved up. So we were good to go for about 2 years. And I just, you know, the best piece of advice I give to writers is give yourself the chance to succeed. You know, you make a first impression once in this business. My agent says he can tell if someone can write within the first 2 pages and if they have a story to tell within the first 5 pages. You do not have a long period to make a strong impression on your readers, on your agents, on your publishers. So you better be good, and you better know what you're talking about early on.
Now, you've picked up on the story of Dr. Jonathan Ransom 6 months down the road from the end of Rules of Deception with your new novel, Rules of Vengeance. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
The story picks up in London. The hero, Dr. Jonathan Ransom, who formerly worked for Doctors Without Borders, you know, traveling the world, kind of working in the most difficult situations, you know, in the political hellholes, kind of delivering medical care to those that don't have it. And he comes to London to speak at a conference, and he finds his wife there. Now, his wife, at the end of the book, has been on the run from this kind of very, say, super secret intelligence agency called Division. And she comes up and she shows up in London for this kind of stolen romantic weekend. And within 24 hours, the romantic weekend turns into an absolute nightmare when Jonathan follows his wife to the site of a car bombing against a Russian motorcade visiting diplomats. Jonathan is quickly implicated and is arrested by the British police. And he realizes that he needs to, you know, free himself to clear his name and to find his wife, to find out what in the world she was doing at that car bomb. And it leads to a manhunt across Europe from London to Italy to France. It involves a lot of large cast of international characters in a conspiracy that I think is really kind of ripped from the headlines.
We're talking to Christopher Reich, author of The Rules of Vengeance.
Your plots have a lot of twists and turns in them. What is your creative process to come up with these stories?
Well, these stories are a mix of, let's say, fact and fantasy. I try to draw as much as I can from what's going on in the world today. So that's where I visit my people in the intelligence world. I do tons of reading. I talk to my friends at think tanks asking, for example, with Rules of Vengeance, we were looking really at the situation between America and Russia. We think Russia's kind of sleeping over there. But if you visit Moscow and you listen to the news, they are casting America as really, you know, the biggest villain to them since Hitler. I mean, they are just absolutely venomous in their attack against America every day on the media. So I thought, okay, something's going on there. That was interesting. And, of course, I know that Russia depends heavily on the price of oil to keep their country strong. And if the price of oil collapses, they're in deep trouble. So there's right now is the idea of the bigger plot, the bigger conspiracy. And then, of course, I'm interested in Jonathan. Really what drives these stories is the relationship between Jonathan and Emma. Here's this woman that's worked with him for 8 years, and in Rules of Deception, he discovers she hasn't just been his loyal assistant. She's also an operative for this super-secret intelligence organization called Division. So it's a whole question of trust. He doesn't know if she loves him. Has she been using him exclusively? He feels so strongly for her that he can't believe he's just been a pawn. And so that's really what drives this book, is this interplay between Jonathan and his wife, Emma. And in Rules of Vengeance, you really see her doing her job as really a top-flight intelligence operative. I say, you know, Emma Ransom can kick Jason Bourne's butt around the block. So that's the kind of girl she is.
Right. In terms of your writing process, do these stories come out sort of conceptually fully formed, or is it an evolutionary process as you go through
it's
writing?
It's a rocky road, I'll tell you. It is a rocky road.
Well, evolutionary.
You start with an idea. For example, I started with this book thinking, okay, Jonathan meets up with Emma. She drags him into this plot and gets him involved in this car bombing. Then I knew kind of what I wanted to happen at the very end. And the hard part is then, you know, putting your characters through the paces and building that suspense so it's just absolutely nail-biting by the end, and then it's realistic. So it is a process that is definitely not kind of linear. You have a lot of stops and starts. And the best way I could say it is, you know, Elmore Leonard, the great crime writer, has a great saying. He says, easy reading means hard writing.
You know, you mentioned Russia. What are your thoughts? You've spent a lot of time studying Russia, I know, and I think, as you just mentioned, they're back to, you know, it seems like almost Cold War type status in terms of how they view the U.S. Do you see them as a legitimate threat to world peace right now?
I don't see them as a threat to world peace so much as a real kind of antagonist to American interests in Europe and in the Middle East. It almost seems like anything that's good for us, Russia will try to counter, because they would rather see us weakened. And that makes Putin stronger. He's really built his regime upon kind of the xenophobia, saying, you know, America's after us, trying to focus his people's attention outside of the country so they don't dwell too much upon their own pressing problems domestically. So, you know, Russia, like I said, they are still very much in the Cold War mentality. I think, you know, like they say, this time it's personal. We won the Cold War. They had a terrible last decade. They're starting to come back. They want to be a player at the top table, so they're going to try to do everything they can to stay at that top table. And unfortunately, a lot of that involves blocking a lot of our important kind of foreign policy objectives.
You know, they broke out, and it seemed like there was a glimmer of hope for democracy there, but really they're back into this regime with Putin. It just seems that they're almost genetically inclined to stay sort of downtrodden from
look at the Russian history.
This back to the czars.
People that have had any kind of democracy or any move toward democracy there, it is, like you said, that's perfectly put. It's genetically programmed to want an authoritarian ruler. And I think they function better that way, frankly. You know, democracy is definitely not the best form of government for everybody.
Right.
And, you know, these people with poor education and stuff, how do they know what's best for them? Russia is booming right now. It's doing well with Putin. I think he's doing a great job for that country, even if he might be enriching himself, so what? They're much better off having a strong hand than they are with democracy.
Right. And they need to have an enemy, it seems like, too.
Exactly.
From Russia with love.
I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you. I've traveled the world to learn I must return from Russia with love.
We're talking to Christopher Reich, author of The Rules of Vengeance.
You spent some time inside the Secret Service. What was that like?
It was incredible. That was one of the highlights of my past 3 years of a research. I wrote this article for Parade magazine about the Secret Service and was really just given. They just opened the door for me and showed me, you know, everything what they do. And A, these are really motivated, exceptional individuals from top to bottom. The sense of camaraderie and fraternity in that organization is unparalleled. The sense of professionalism, the demands put upon these agents is extraordinary, and they respond to them in an extraordinary way. So I'm a big fan of the Secret Service. Mark Sullivan, the director, and I have become friendly. And, all I'll say is this, President Obama is in very good hands.
Yeah. I mean, the pressure must be even greater today than it ever was with Obama as president, right?
Pressure is greater, of course, for all the reasons you can imagine. But the point that Director Sullivan always made to me is that, listen, he goes, it's no different with Obama than anybody. Our job remains the same. We protect all of our protectees, to the best of our ability. And the best point he makes, he goes, we have to be successful 100% of the time. The bad guys have to succeed 1 in 100 times, and we can't let that happen. So that is the level of kind of professionalism they hold themselves at.
With all your analysis and your exposure to national security advisors and going to other countries and meeting with their security people, what are your thoughts about our vulnerability from a national security perspective?
Our greatest vulnerability right now, without doubt, is in the cyber warfare area. Of course, we might be vulnerable to terrorist attacks in a smaller fashion, but what really is the unspoken kind of gorilla in the room, or whatever elephant in the corner, is the ability of foreign powers to come in and knock out our computer and defense, let's say, infrastructure through cyber attacks, because everything is computerized these days, everything is digital. You take out NORAD or STRATCOM or one of these big CENTCOMs, whatever, you knock down their computer systems and we are in deep, deep trouble. And you have China that has a whole secret intelligence group that just gets their best and brightest and teaches them kind of how to hack into our computers. It's happening every day. Every day the United States fends off literally hundreds, if not thousands, of cyber attacks, denial of service, all kinds of hacking into our national defense computers. It comes from China. It comes from Eastern Europe, where they have these groups of organized criminals, and then also fostered and sponsored by, the State Security Service, the FSB in Russia, different ones in Bulgaria, Romania, whatever. So that's our greatest threat.
What's next in the rules series?
I got rules of attack coming up.
All right.
I'm on page 100. If you have any ideas, feel free.
I don't think I can add to anything that you can conjure up, that's for sure. Any other ideas in the pipeline besides the rules series?
We're starting to get rules moving into a movie motion picture production at Paramount. They have a great script, and they're actually out looking for a very big star. The budget is so big that they can only have a big star, and they're talking to Brad Pitt. I know, read it and really liked it, and then they're... that's their number one choice, and hopefully it's not him, and Hugh Jackman, who I love. So either one of those guys would be fantastic. So I have that, the movie going, we have a TV going, TV show that I'm working on now. So a lot of stuff happening.
That's terrific, and I noticed Rules of Vengeance moved into the New York Times top 10 seller list this week.
Yes, it is. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, congratulations. Well, we've been speaking with Christopher Reich, the author of Rules of Vengeance, and is there a website?
Yes, it's an easy one, www.christopherreich.com, and that's last name is R-E-I-C-H. There you go.
Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number and taken away your name.
That's it for this week's edition of What's at Risk. I'd like to thank our guests tonight, Timothy Egan, author of The Big Burn, and Christopher Reich, author of The Rules of Vengeance. I'd like to thank our producer, Johnny Pfister of Ringo Studio, and our associate producer, Scott Cooper. Let us know what you're thinking about by sending us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com. Tell us what's on your mind.
Podcasts of What's at Risk are available at the WBZ.com on the air drop-down menu by clicking on What's at Risk. You've been listening to What's at Risk, heard every Saturday night on WBZ News Radio 1030 and streaming on WBZ.com.
Run the risk, or you'll never know for sure.
When your company is considering risk management and consultative support for your business insurance, make the right choice and call Risk Strategies Company. With offices in Massachusetts, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Irvine, California, Chicago, and Providence, Risk Strategies Company takes a team approach to protecting your assets efficiently and cost-effectively. By offering a wide range of services and capabilities, Risk Strategies Company brings the highest level of expertise to clients in all areas of insurance and risk management, delivering insurance solutions, extensive carrier relationships and marketing expertise, claim advocacy, loss control safety management, health and welfare coverage, life and executive compensation plans, personal insurance lines, and surety. For the most comprehensive risk management and insurance coverage for your business, depend on Risk Strategies Company. Learn more at risk-strategies.com or call 617-330-5700. 617-330-5700.